All right. So have you ever wondered what happens when, like state and federal laws kind of clash in court?
Oh, yeah.
Well, get ready for a deep dive into a landmark Supreme Court decision, Murdoch v. City of Memphis, that still has an impact on legal battles even today. We're going way back to 1875.
Wow.
Reconstruction era, right? A time of like shifting power between states and the federal government. It all started as like just a local land squabble over a naval depot
Oh, wow.
in Memphis, Tennessee. But then it like blew up into this constitutional showdown about the Supreme Court's power.
Right.
Can they overturn state court decisions, and how much power do they actually have?
That's fascinating. And what's really interesting here is how it all stemmed from what seems like a pretty straightforward property dispute. Back in 1844, Murdoch's ancestor sold land to the city for a naval depot. But then, here's the twist, Congress returns the land back to Memphis in 1854.
Oh.
And that's when Murdoch's heirs saw an opportunity.
Makes sense. Right.
They claimed the land was held in trust, meaning it should have gone back to them, not the city.
I mean, it seems logical, right? They probably thought, hey, if the Navy's not using it anymore, we should get it back. But of course, the Tennessee courts were like, nope. The original deed and Congress's actions, they don't support a trust. So Murdoch, being persistent, appeals all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Right, and that's when this whole thing takes on a whole new dimension because the core issue became how much power does the Supreme Court actually have to review these state court decisions? And the Judiciary Act of 1867, especially its 25th section, that was supposed to clarify the Supreme Court's review powers, but it used this like ambiguous language and it just fueled more debate.
It's also like Congress like accidentally threw a wrench into the works, and they created this huge legal battle. So what happened next? Did the Supreme Court just like swoop in and take over the case?
Well, not exactly. Justice Miller, who wrote the majority opinion, he actually set some really important boundaries. He emphasized that for the Supreme Court to even have jurisdiction, the case had to have a federal question, like at its core. He actually even stated, and I'm quoting here, "It is essential to the jurisdiction of this court over the judgment of a state court that it shall appear that one of the questions mentioned in the act must have been raised and presented to the state court." Basically, what he did was like draw a line in the sand, saying the Supreme Court shouldn't just be a super appeals court for every single state decision that comes up.
So, like, no more being the ultimate judge for every little local squabble.
Right.
I bet that brought some relief to state courts. But how did they actually like decide which cases had that all-important federal question?
Well, this is where Justice Miller establishes what we call today the Miller test. It's like a four-part checklist that lawyers still use even today to see if their case even has a chance of making it all the way to the Supreme Court. Think of it as like a legal roadmap to the highest court in the land.
Okay, I'm definitely intrigued. Let's break down this Miller test, because I'm sure like this is big for any lawyer that's dealing with cases that might have federal implications. So, what's the first checkpoint on this list?
Well, first, a federal question actually has to have been raised in the lower state courts. It can't just like appear out of thin air at the Supreme Court level.
Right.
It needs to be part of the case from the very beginning.
So, no last-minute surprises for the Supreme Court. Got it. What's the next step? What's next on the checklist?
Okay, so the state court actually has to have ruled on that specific federal question. If they ignore it or kind of dance around it, the Supreme Court is probably not going to step in. They want to see that the state court really considered that federal issue.
So state courts can't just pretend that a federal issue doesn't exist. They've got to address it head on.
Exactly.
Makes sense. So what's the third hurdle, the third thing you have to clear?
All right, this one gets a little tricky.
Okay.
Was the state court's ruling on that federal question essential to the final judgment? Or could the case have been decided just based on state law, even if the federal question had, gone a different way? If it's the latter, the Supreme Court probably isn't going to get involved.
So they're really looking for cases where the federal question is like the main thing, the deciding factor,
Right.
not just something on the side.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's the final piece of the puzzle? What's that fourth thing?
The last part is that the state court's ruling on the federal question has to have gone against the rights or claims being made under federal law.
Okay.
So, in essence, was there a potential violation of, the Constitution, a federal statute, or a treaty?
Oh, okay.
The Supreme Court's main job is to make sure that federal law is applied consistently in all the states.
It's like a double check on the system,
Right.
making sure that everyone is playing by the same federal rules.
Exactly.
This Miller test, is really clever.
Yeah.
I mean, it sets a high bar for review. It makes sure that the Supreme Court only gets involved when it's absolutely necessary.
Exactly. And this really emphasizes the point that state courts have the primary authority to decide on matters of state law. The Supreme Court is there to protect federal law, not to like micromanage every single thing that state courts do.
This is starting to make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So we had this simple property dispute that turned into this huge constitutional showdown, leading to this thing called the Miller test, which has had a massive impact on our legal system. But how does Murdoch actually play out in today's world, in today's courtrooms? Isn't this like an old history lesson at this point?
Not at all. Murdoch is very much alive. The principles set out in this case are still being cited and applied today, and they really shape how lawyers approach cases that involve both state and federal law issues.
Can you give me like a concrete example? How has Murdoch actually been used in more recent cases?
Sure. A great example is United States v. Sheffer from 1998, which dealt with polygraph evidence in military courts. The Supreme Court actually directly referenced Murdoch when they were discussing the limits of their jurisdiction when reviewing state court judgments.
It's amazing how a land dispute from like the 1800s is still having such a big impact today. But if Justice Miller's opinion was so clear-cut, like, why were there dissenting opinions in this case? What were the other justices concerned about?
That's a really good question. And it actually highlights that Murdoch's legacy isn't without its complexities. There are still debates going on. You know, two justices, Clifford and Bradley, actually dissented from the majority opinion. And their concerns really reveal some of the like potential issues with this strictly limited approach to how the Supreme Court reviews cases.
Okay, so let's unpack those dissenting opinions, because I'm sure they have some really valuable insights. What were Justice Clifford's main objections?
Well, Justice Clifford really pushed for a like broader interpretation of the Supreme Court's power to review cases. He felt that if a case was under their jurisdiction because of a federal question, they should be able to decide on all the issues involved, not just the federal part. He was worried that focusing only on the federal question could actually lead to injustices.
So he was afraid that they might miss the forest for the trees and maybe overlook some other errors or, you know, injustices along the way.
Yeah, exactly.
What about Justice Bradley? What were his issues?
Well, Justice Bradley actually disagreed with the majority's interpretation of the 1867 Judiciary Act. He argued that certain language being left out of the earlier version of the act meant that Congress actually intended to give the Supreme Court more review power than the majority opinion allowed. He believed they should be able to look at the entire case, not just the federal piece of it.
So both dissenting justices, although for different reasons, felt that the majority's opinion was just too restrictive, and it could actually lead to some unfair outcomes. It's like a reminder that even these big landmark Supreme Court decisions are often the result of like really intense debate and different ways of looking at the law.
Exactly. And their dissenting opinions actually kind of foreshadowed some of the debates that we still have today about, you know, how much power the Supreme Court should have to review decisions and how complicated it is to balance federal and state judicial power. The legacy of Murdoch isn't a simple one. It's something that legal scholars are still analyzing and debating.
This has been a really fascinating deep dive so far. I mean, we've gone into the origins of Murdoch, the creation of the Miller test, which has been so influential, and these dissenting voices that show how complex this case really is.
Yeah.
But are there like any lingering questions or like scenarios where applying Murdoch can get kind of tricky?
Absolutely. One of the trickiest things is this thing called the intertwined doctrine, and it deals with situations where it's almost impossible to separate state and federal issues in a case. Imagine you have a state law claim that really depends on how you interpret a federal statute, or where like applying a state law might actually violate someone's federal constitutional rights. It's a legal puzzle that can be really tough to solve.
This intertwined doctrine definitely adds another layer of complexity to an already super fascinating case. I mean, this makes the job of lawyers even more challenging, right? I mean, they would be really strategic in how they present their arguments, especially when you're dealing with cases that involve both state and federal law issues.
Oh, absolutely. Understanding the details of Murdoch and all the cases that have come after it, that's crucial for any lawyer dealing with these kinds of cases. It's not just about winning. It's about really shaping how our legal system works and making sure there's that balance of power between the state and federal courts.
This deep dive has been so enlightening, and I feel like we've just scratched the surface of Murdoch's complexity and its impact. But we're going to have to pause here for now. Stay tuned for part two of our deep dive into Murdoch v. Memphis, where we'll delve even further into the nuances and the implications of this landmark case.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Murdoch v. Memphis. You know, before we moved on, we were talking about that intertwined doctrine and how it really kind of messes with that clean separation of state and federal issues that Murdoch tries to set up, you know?
Right. It's like, how do you even untangle that knot where state and federal law are just all mixed up together? It makes you wonder, like, how does the Supreme Court actually handle these super messy situations where it's just impossible to separate the state and federal parts of a case?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? And it's something that's really stumped legal minds for a long time. Murdoch itself, like, it doesn't give us a step-by-step guide for these intertwined cases. But the Supreme Court, over the years, they've come up with different ways of dealing with them. And, you know, those approaches, they're still changing and evolving.
So it's like a constantly shifting landscape, huh?
Right.
That's got to be fascinating, but also kind of a headache for lawyers who are dealing with all this complexity in their real-world cases.
Oh, absolutely. And that brings us to, like, a really crucial point about what Murdoch actually means for practicing law. Lawyers, especially those working in state courts, they need to really get Murdoch and the cases that came after it. It's not just some theoretical thing you learn in law school.
Right.
It's about making smart decisions that can actually win or lose a case.
So let's dive into the nitty-gritty here. How does Murdoch actually play out in legal strategy? What are some, like, key things that lawyers should keep in mind if they're dealing with cases that have both state and federal law elements to them?
Well, one of the biggest lessons from Murdoch is that lawyers have to be really careful to keep those federal questions alive throughout the whole case, you know, the whole litigation process. You can't just suddenly bring up a federal issue at the Supreme Court if you want them to review it.
So it's like you've got to lay the groundwork from the very beginning.
Right, exactly. You have to bring up the federal issue in those initial documents, the pleadings, make your arguments based on federal law, and make sure that it's all documented, that the state court actually considered and ruled on that federal question. It's like building a house, you know?
Yeah.
If you don't get the foundation right, the whole thing could just fall apart.
That's a great analogy. But what happens if a lawyer kind of, you know, slips up? What if they don't properly preserve that federal question way back in the state court? Is the case basically doomed if they want to appeal to the Supreme Court?
That's where things can get really tricky, and it shows why Murdoch is so important to understand. If a federal question wasn't properly raised and preserved in those state court proceedings, the Supreme Court might just say, nope, we're not hearing this, even if there's a really big federal issue at play.
Wow, so the stakes are pretty high. Lawyers have to be super careful and strategic to make sure they don't accidentally close the door on a potential appeal to the Supreme Court.
Exactly. And this is just one example of how Murdoch has really influenced the way law is practiced. It's a constant reminder that knowing those boundaries of jurisdiction and being really careful about preserving federal questions, those are key for any lawyer who wants to, you know, navigate this complicated system we have with state and federal courts.
So Murdoch is way more than just a case about a piece of property in Memphis, right?
Right.
It's something that continues to have this ripple effect on how lawyers handle cases and even how our courts function.
Absolutely. Murdoch set a precedent that really shapes how we understand that balance between state and federal power. It reminds us that federalism, it's not just some abstract idea. It's actually a principle that's playing out every single day in courts all over the country.
This deep dive has been so insightful. But I have a feeling we've only just scratched the surface here. Are there other big cases, or maybe legal doctrines, that have either built on what Murdoch established or maybe even challenged those principles?
That's a great question. And it takes us right into how this whole area of law has developed. You see, Murdoch might have been decided back in 1875, but it's not stuck in the past. Over the years, the Supreme Court has had to deal with new challenges and sort of fine-tune how they approach that interplay between state and federal law.
So it's not enough to just apply Murdoch to every case, right?
Right.
You have to understand how it fits into this much bigger legal picture that's always changing. Can you give us an example of a case that maybe built on what Murdoch did or maybe even pushed the boundaries a little bit?
One case that comes to mind is Michigan v. Long, which was decided in 1983. This case was about a search and seizure issue. And the Supreme Court had to figure out if they even had the power to review what the Michigan Supreme Court had decided, because their decision was partly based on the Michigan state constitution.
Oh, so we're back to that tricky territory of state and federal issues getting all mixed up together.
Yeah.
How did the Supreme Court approach that situation? How does Michigan v. Long relate to what we've been discussing about Murdoch?
What's interesting about Michigan v. Long is that it added this new layer to how we understand Murdoch. The Supreme Court said that they could review a state court's decision, even if it relied on state law, if it wasn't totally clear whether that decision was really separate from federal law.
Hold on, let me make sure I've got this straight. In Murdoch, the idea was that if a state court decision could stand on its own, just based on state law, the Supreme Court would stay out of it.
Right.
But Michigan v. Long seems to be saying that it's not always so simple.
Exactly. Michigan v. Long acknowledged that sometimes it's really hard to tell if a state court relied on state law because it was genuinely a separate issue, or if they were trying to avoid federal review by making a federal issue look like a state law issue.
Sounds like a bit of a legal game, huh?
Yeah.
The Supreme Court doesn't want state courts to hide behind state law to prevent legitimate federal review.
Right. And this is where Michigan v. Long gets really interesting. The Supreme Court basically said, okay, here's the new rule. If a state court decision doesn't specifically say that it's based on adequate and independent state grounds, then we're going to assume that it's based on federal law and we can review it.
So Michigan v. Long basically put the responsibility on the state courts to be really clear.
Yeah.
They can't just kind of hint at state law grounds. They have to be explicit about it if they want to avoid having the Supreme Court take a look. That's a pretty big change from what Murdoch established.
It is. And it really highlights that constant tension between letting states do their own thing and making sure federal law is applied consistently. Michigan v. Long shows that what Murdoch laid out isn't set in stone. It's part of this ever-changing legal landscape.
This conversation is really giving me a new appreciation for how complicated our dual court system is and how these cases, like Murdoch and Michigan v. Long, have shaped that balance of power between state and federal courts. But I'm wondering, what about people who think that the Supreme Court's power to review cases should be even more limited? Are there concerns about, like, the federal government overstepping its bounds and the Supreme Court getting too involved in matters that should be left to the states?
You've brought up a really important point that is still a big part of the debate in this area of law. There are definitely legitimate concerns about the federal government getting too powerful and the importance of respecting what state courts do. Some legal experts think that Michigan v. Long actually went too far in giving the Supreme Court more power to review cases, and that it might be undermining those principles of federalism that Murdoch tried to uphold.
So it's like this constant balancing act,
right?
Trying to make sure federal law is supreme, but also respecting what state courts do. It sounds like there are no easy answers. And cases like Murdoch and Michigan v. Long really show how complex this whole issue is.
Absolutely. And these debates aren't just theoretical, you know? They have real-world consequences for how our justice system works and how people's rights are protected. Understanding the history behind these cases and how they've evolved helps us see how complicated our court system is and why finding that balance between state and federal power is so important.
This deep dive has been incredibly insightful. We've talked about the history of Murdoch, the Miller test, that whole intertwined doctrine, and how later cases, like Michigan v. Long, have made things even more complex. It's clear that Murdoch v. Memphis is so much more than just a case about some land. It's a decision that's still shaping American law today.
Definitely. And as we keep exploring the impact of Murdoch, we're going to uncover even more fascinating details and see how far-reaching its influence really is. Stick with us for the final part of our deep dive, where we'll look at how Murdoch has shaped legal strategies, influenced the way judges make decisions, and fueled those ongoing debates about the balance of power in our federal system.
Welcome back for the last part of our deep dive into Murdoch v. Memphis. Mm-hmm. We've really covered a lot, you know, from the background of the case to the Miller test and that intertwined doctrine. This has been quite a journey.
It really has. And as we wrap up, I want to kind of focus on what this case means, you know, for how we understand the legal system as a whole, especially that balance between state and federal courts, you know, how they interact.
Yeah, sounds like a good way to bring everything together. Yes. So what are some of the big takeaways from Murdoch, like things that go beyond that specific land dispute that happened way back when?
One of the most important things is that Murdoch isn't just about who wins or loses a case. It's about how our legal system is structured, you know? It set up rules that still affect how courts work and how lawyers approach cases that have both state and federal law issues.
So Murdoch didn't just settle that one dispute. It kind of helped create this whole legal landscape, right? What are some of the big features of that landscape?
Well, Murdoch really reinforced this idea of adequate and independent state grounds. Basically, it means if a state court decision can stand on its own, just based on state law, the Supreme Court will usually respect that decision, even if there's a federal issue, kind of, you know, in the background.
Right. So it's like recognizing that state courts have their own authority and that the Supreme Court won't step in unless it has to.
Exactly. And that's so important for letting states be independent and making sure the Supreme Court isn't trying to control every little thing state courts do.
But as we've talked about, you can't always just separate state and federal issues, can you? What happens in those situations where it gets blurry, where they're just all tangled up together?
That's where things get really interesting. And it shows that Murdoch isn't just some fixed rule. It's part of this conversation that keeps going in the legal world. Cases like Michigan v. Long, which we talked about, they've added more layers to how we understand Murdoch. They've actually made it more likely that the Supreme Court will step in and review a case when it's not clear whether the state court's decision is based on state law and not federal law.
So it's this kind of back and forth between respecting the power of the states and making sure federal law is applied consistently across the board. Murdoch might have started things off, but the debate keeps going, and every new case kind of adds to the story.
That's a really good way to put it. And for all the legal folks listening, whether you're a lawyer or a law student, Murdoch really shows how important it is to think like a lawyer, to analyze cases, and to understand how the different parts of our legal system work together.
It's not just about memorizing rules, right?
Yeah.
It's about having this deeper understanding of the process and seeing how everything fits together.
Exactly. And for people who aren't lawyers, Murdoch lets us see how our system of checks and balances actually works, you know, how power is split between the state and federal governments, and how the courts help settle disputes and figure out what the law means.
It's amazing to think that Murdoch, which seems like a kind of technical case about an old property dispute, actually touches on these really important principles that are fundamental to how our government works and how our rights are protected.
It does. And to wrap up our deep dive, I want to leave everyone with this thought. Murdoch v. Memphis is more than just one case. It's part of this ongoing effort to balance power, respecting what states do, but also making sure federal law is the top dog.
That's a perfect way to sum it up. It reminds us that the law isn't just some set of rules written in stone. It's a living thing, you know, always evolving as we face new challenges and try to build a fairer, more just society.
And Murdoch v. Memphis is like a powerful reminder of that evolution. It shows that even these seemingly small disputes, you know, hyper-local disputes, can really affect how our legal system works and even the core of our democracy.
This has been such a fascinating deep dive. Thanks for joining us as we explored Murdoch v. Memphis and its impact on the law.